It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another fine edition of the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Hello there, Daniel.
Good afternoon, Mark.
Getting ready for back to school here pretty soon, and you have a timely subject this week. How to direct or redirect our young people. Now, is this for all ages or the one that's still stuck in the basement? Or what are you thinking about here?
I think direct could be for all ages. When I'm thinking of redirect, the age group that I have in mind is actually those who are out of the home. I guess sometimes we're trying to redirect our teenagers too.
Mm-hmm.
I know my dad was. Say you've had trouble with my brothers.
Okay. How many brothers do you have?
Keep me out of it. What?
How big a family? Oh. How many brothers?
Three.
Three brothers. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So directing, redirecting young people. Okay. I think that a lot of people would agree, if you know, people that are kind of have their eyes open and they're looking at what's happening in our culture. And of course, I see the downside of that. People don't come for counseling because everything's going well. And so I kind of see the, right. the downside. But I think most people would agree that we're kind of on a downward trend here.
Mm. You have seen a lot of young people in your practice through the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I'm happy to say that I've enjoyed working with that group in the 20s, early and mid and late 20s age group. But sometimes these kids can be quite messed up, and I think that even kids in the church, which is the bulk of my ministry or my counseling, is in the Christian
community. So even
community.
Christian teens are messed up.
Yes, I don't okay. think that
Maybe
I don't
more than the average.
I don't think there's anything I've seen in the secular world that I haven't seen in the church.
Okay.
And even more so now, I wanted to take a little bit of time in the first part of the show to just kind of describe the topography of our present culture. And again, I see the dark side of it and hear the sad stories. And so if you're out there and you're just not aware of any of this going on, it might come as a kind of a shock to you or a surprise. But I think most people, you know, just by reading the news and seeing things that are going on, and it's particular in the urban areas, but and so much written on just the, first of all, the disillusionment of this generation. Philosophically, we've been headed toward, you know, atheism and absurdism. You know what absurdism is? It's that there really isn't any reason in life. You can pretend that there is, but it's absurd to pretend that there is, and just you should just go out and party. Mm. And because things aren't supposed to make sense. And of course, atheism leads to an absurdism. So they're disillusioned. They're disillusioned with authority. They're disillusioned with life in so many ways.
Now, why would Christian teens be struggling? Are you saying a lot of Christian teens are basically atheists or headed toward atheism?
There are. So my definition of an atheist is a person who hates God for not existing. So okay. I think that there are agnostics, and someone said an agnostic is someone who's too lazy to ask questions. But I think that there are people who just shrug and say, I don't know. And I think that a lot of Christians, young people, have not thought about their faith enough and applied mm-hmm. faith in the culture enough to prove it. And if it's unproven,
it's not their own.
It's not their own. Mm-hmm. That's a good way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're disillusioned. It's a rebellious generation. Which it's a lawless generation, and
more than ever.
Yeah, more than ever. Mm. And it's an addicted generation. Mm-hmm. I just put down three quickly. They're kind of very general. I mentioned earlier that urbanization. You typically earlier in earlier decades, you wouldn't expect to find a lot of this confusion, this delusionment, rebellion, and addiction, and thing out in the more rural America. But you're beginning to find it more and more now, and I think that's a lot because of social media.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost and people live so virtually anymore in social media, and you know, young people, and sometimes even older young people, that, you know, play these computer games with people clear around the world. And so it's a smaller world now.
Mm-hmm.
But typically, the urbanized areas this is a lot more intense. And you have in these urbanized areas, you have loss of community, for one thing. You have a cross-culture. The urbanization draws people they come for work. And it draws people with different values and different cultures, and so you have this cultural mix and this cultural kind of collision. When a mix sounds very kind of almost gentle and kind, and that's not really what's going on in a lot of these huge urbanizations where you have these cities that are just kind of wealth oriented. They're not really family kind or community kind. It's a cultural collision, and it's a fragmentation, and it also leads then eventually maybe to a diluted education system because, you know, with the whole PC mm-hmm. thing, nobody wants to offend anybody for
right.
anything. So everything's watered down. It's almost to the point of being meaningless. So loss of value core, because when the urbanization urban areas draw people with different values. You can't teach a core of values without being offensive. Again, the PC thing. So we've lost the value core, the things that you used to tell people. I didn't grow up very far from here. It wasn't as urban as it is now. But when I grew up, if I walked out my door, if my dad and I had a riff and I walked out and I said, I'm not coming back here. I'm going to go get a job. And I walked down to Roy's Market and asked for a job. And he'd say, well, give me your address. And I'd say, well, I'm not living there. I took off. And he'd say, well, then take off from here, because I pretty much believe what your dad believes. So if I walked out of my house, I was pretty much surrounded by a community that had the same values basically that were in my house. And,
mm-hmm.
You don't have that anymore. The core is gone.
Yeah, there's a competition for values, and
yeah.
Kids learn about all kinds of alternative mm-hmm. lifestyles that they never heard about mm-hmm. in their home,
yeah.
but they hear in the media, hear on TV, and
yeah.
they seem like good options.
Yeah, the loss of all these things in urbanization actually leads to isolation, and people. So in isolation, one of the things that surfaces is a need to belong. And this is where this comes in that you just saying. So these young people want to belong, but belong to what? There's no high ground. And unfortunately, some of the high ground that appears in this culture is not necessarily good. Well, for example, I saw a photograph I forget if it was a newspaper or where, but I saw a photograph of a Antifa gathering. So mm-hmm. this is these kids are going out to bash people and that. And you can tell in the front row were the mean people. But if you look back two or three rows, they're just kids that want to belong to something. And
right.
and this is the high ground. This is kind of the magnet. This is what's drawing them. They don't have a reason not to belong here. All you have to do to belong is wear something black and have an attitude, and you're in.
Right.
And so you don't have to believe in anything. Just just be angry, and you're part of it. So unfortunately, this need for belonging, and it's almost as though there's this cultural disarray, and the Pied Piper comes along, and the kids just follow these mm-hmm. to whatever. Could be gender dysphoria, could be Antifa, could be just being passive about life and playing games and sleep until the afternoon. Absurdism, as I was saying, mm-hmm. No such thing as reason. We live in a kind of a schizophrenic society where Hollywood and the make-believers are kind of the new reality.
Mm-hmm.
Maslow said we're pleasure seeking and pain avoiding, and that was an observation of his. But we've kind of turned that observation into a mandate, a cultural mandate now, that we must seek pleasure and we must avoid pain. So we do this through mood medications, addictions, constant input of entertainment and subliminal guidance. Everywhere I go, there seems to be some force-fed kind of manipulative media. You notice that in the grocery store, there's music. Home Depot, there's music. You're blasted. Gas station, you've got a gas station TV. You can't even go into a public toilet without a TV screen telling you what your next thought should be.
Right.
You know, it's just noise. And it just doesn't seem that there's anywhere where there's silence and contemplation. And even if you could find a place, what are people likely to think about these days? Would they even know what to think about? Would they be able to think? In fact, all these addictive kinds of tools, whether it be social media or telephones or legal marijuana or
binge watching Netflix.
Yes, Netflix, all these things. These are teaching us not to think.
Mm.
It's a different part of the brain. So, you know, if you go up to the mountains to get away, you see people doing selfies and texting. You just simply can't get away from the noise. Nihilism and violence is always kind of the end of this sequence. And the reason is why I think that because once we've convinced ourselves that there isn't a God that's ordering life, then it's kind of a king of the mountain thing. You know, it's whoever can get the highest, and everyone's a potential God. And of course, might is right. That's the only thing that's left if there's not a God in control. Mm. So our kids are sort of in this, and the Christian community, kids are in it too. And so we could ask ourselves, well, aren't they being taught in the homes, or aren't they being taught in the churches? So that's kind of where we want to go when we start talking about how do we turn this around. Mm-hmm. So that's the topography. And a lot of people out there know that, and they have kids that are in these situations in dire need of some direction or redirection. And like a lot of these parents I talk to they got their finger just hovering over the panic button because it just seems that there's no quick fix. And what can we do? We certainly want to do something. We don't want to lose our kids, but what can we do? Hopefully we're going to talk about something.
Okay, well, we are talking about how to direct or redirect our young people, teenagers, 20-somethings. Daniel actually works a lot with this age group. He's run across a lot of situations, has had some success in helping to redirect young people. And if you have a young person in your life, you know one, Daniel would love to help you. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yeah, the number. The number is 425-778-6169, 778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. Office is in Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay, back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. You know, anxiety and depression contribute to every type of psychosis, behavioral problem, and even many health issues. Unchecked, they can ruin your life. But you don't have to let that happen. If you feel that you or someone that you know is struggling with anxiety and depression, call me and let me teach you the tools to build, manage, and maintain a more wholesome lifestyle. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at the young people in our lives, directing or redirecting our young people, whether it's a teenager, that 20-something who has failed to launch, as they say, still in the basement. Of course, there can be some economic reasons for that. So many young people are getting done with college and finding out it didn't get them a job immediately, and now they've got hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. Of course, that's a different kind of discouragement.
Yeah.
But we're talking about general discouragement and kind of the you mentioned the topography that young people are facing today.
Yeah, just the lay of the land, where what our culture is like and what they face. I actually, when I was writing out this program, I actually had thought about directing and motivating. But motivating is a little bit of a different thing, but they certainly do need motivation. And part of this involves that one of these days we'll do a program on motivating. That's a whole area in and of itself. Mm. But I think the principles are the same in that what we're going to talk about here has to do certainly with leading by example. I talk to parents from time to time who have difficulty with their motivating their kids, and I can tell one quick story of a gal. I was teaching a anger management class for teens and their parents, and this woman came, and she brought two sons, teenage sons. It surprised me that they came because they were bigger than she was, and I don't think they wanted to be there, but they came anyway. And but her complaint was that she was saying they could be anything they want if they would just put their mind to it, but they just don't seem to be motivated. So I asked her what she wanted to be, you know, because she had said they could be whatever they wanted to be. I asked, what did you want to be? And she said, well, I wanted to be a nurse, and just kind of shrugged her shoulders. And I said, well, so what happened? Well, she said, just, you know, life. So I asked her some questions, you know, well, do you still want to be a nurse? Well, you know, yeah. So you can see where this is going, right? Because she was going to have to answer some questions and be mm-hmm. motivated herself, or she'd be hard pressed to motivate mm-hmm. her kids. Talking about these, the kids that are sort of lost in this cultural jungle that we have here, and particularly in urban areas, but not all. As I said before, the social media and the world has gotten smaller because of that, and so we begin to find some of these problems even out in rural areas where communities used to support and help to guide young people. And that's kind of collapsing there too. But what do we do? So there's no magic here, unfortunately, but I will tell you, pass something on that I've passed on before, came from my father, and that is life isn't easy, but it's simple. Mm. And so the things that I have to share here, I hope this doesn't seem anticlimactic, but there are going to be things you've probably heard and thought about, but they are true. To start the process, we have to start the process of rebuilding the social moorings and establish a high ground that's not there, a moral high ground.
A biblical high ground.
A biblical mm-hmm. high ground. Mm-hmm. We have to reset the standard. Christ said, if I be lifted up, I'll draw all men unto me. And, of course, he was speaking about the cross, but beyond the cross, you know, and we've understood that if we, the body of Christ, exalt Christ, if we demonstrate Christ, not just talk about him, but if we demonstrate Christ, that the world will be drawn to Christ. They may not like Christ, but they'll be drawn to Christ. And so this is basically what we want to do, and so I just want to outline this. It'll make perfect sense to you, but so much sense maybe that we just haven't bothered to do it because it seemed so simple. But, you know, it certainly isn't easy, and we can start right off with the first one, and you know how difficult this is going to be. Lift up Christ in your personal life. If we want to our kids, and I'm speaking to parents whose kids have gone off and joined the whole gay movement, so I'm talking about serious situations. And so, people, their first response when I talk like this, they might be saying, "Oh my goodness, don't you have anything better than that?" Because we're bleeding here, and I say, "This is the thing that you have to do, and you've got to trust God in this."
So even though kids are maybe out of your direct influence, mm-hmm. you still can influence them.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. I remember, so my father passed away, I think, about 5 years ago. And up until that time, even in my late 60s, I was still watching how he handled life, every aspect of life. In this particular instance, it was how he approached death. Mm. No, I don't think our kids are ever through watching us, even though they get to a point where they don't listen much anymore. But I think they continue to watch.
All right.
So I got to lift Christ up in my personal life. What does that mean? What does that look like? Well, I have to obey. I have to obey Christ. And I have to practice his continual presence. And that, so if you want something to do with your spare time, obey and practice God's continual presence, whether you're in traffic, with the spouse, at work. Check in more often, more often, more often. Practice knowing that you're in the presence of God. Begin to practice. And you know, this may sound like, again, like a simple thing, but I'm telling you, this is where it began to fall. This is where the topography for these kids began to change, and how we make mistakes so many times in our parenting, not by things we've done, but by things that we were passive on. Mm. And so this would be the first one. I have to lift Christ up in my own personal life, because if I don't do the first thing, lifting Christ up in my personal life, I can't do the second thing, which is lifting Christ up in my marriage. A lot of people try to get these mixed around and out of order and do them out of order. It doesn't work that way. Mm. You can't put Christ first in your marriage if he's not first in your life. It isn't going to happen. What do I mean by putting Christ first in my marriage? That means agape, serving that other person, loving, cherishing the other person, no cross words, no distancing, no condescension, but agape, loving, serving that other person, modeling the love of God. And modeling the love of God is modeling the presence of God and the reality that God lives, exists, and lives in us. I've talked about the triad, trust, forgiveness, and communion, modeling all of those things. You have to lead by example. Again, our kids are watching us. They may be on the other side of the world, checking in from time to mm-hmm. time. You know, I have talked to some people in Switzerland who had a daughter out this way who married another woman. And the daughter checks in with them from time to time, still very much wants the love of her parents, even though she's mm-hmm. gone down this other road. And it's very difficult for the parents to try to separate out, you know, love for the daughter and yet disappointment in her choices. Well, these are the things that we need to do, as difficult as it may seem to do them. You know, lifting up Christ in your personal life, lifting up Christ in your marriage, and being leading by example in that way. The third one would be lifting up Christ in your household. And this might be for more for people. Well, it's still important, because that other child comes to visit. I'm talking to some parents now whose kids have been away from the home for years, and now they're coming back for financial reasons or whatever, and they come right into this home. Mm. And, you know, we want a home where Christ is lifted up in the home. Mm. I remember as a young person, my dad and I had a horrendous argument and fight, and I left home for over a year. And when I came back to a home where Christ was lifted up and exalted, and mm-hmm. I could tell the difference, and it was a turning mm-hmm. point for mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. You know, lifting up Christ in the household, the Bible should be somewhere in the house, not hidden, right. But it should begin right. to be the center of right. the, you know, every situation in the home should be recognized as a potential situation for a teaching opportunity. If the kids are there, these are kids where we want them to know how Christ is applicable, the Bible's applicable in our culture and in their lives. Mm-hmm. And then the next one would be lifting up Christ in your local church. And this may surprise people a bit, but unless I'm lifting up Christ in my personal life, and we're lifting up Christ in our marriages and Christ in our households, we cannot lift Christ up in the local church, mm-hmm. because, you know, and as Ephesians 4 spells this out, Paul's talking about the church coming together as a perfect man and the unity of the faith, and build up and edified by that which every mm-hmm. joint supplies. Those mm-hmm. joints are relationships and families. Mm-hmm. So, and then beyond that would be the society, but they have to be in that order: myself, okay. my marriage, my household, the church. And so, you know, one other thing that I'd point out here, that for people whose kids have gone, and that is what this is going to do is teach us to pray. And that's one of the that's a lost art in the church. And so I need to learn to pray. And this is for me as well as my child, you know. So God is going to bring our kids back. And I think that some of them are going to bring some people back out of the darkness with them. You know, God loves them more than we do. And he hasn't, you know, I say to my daughter, once you gave your life to the Lord, he's not going to give it back. So those kids are in his hands, and he's got a purpose for them, a destiny for them. But we need to learn to pray. So there we have it. They're simple. As I said, no magic, but that's what we must do.
Okay.
And just trusting God in their lives as well.
So continuing to be an inspiration for your kids, no matter where they are, still at home, far away from home, in more ways than one, your life has an impact on them. If you've got young people in your life who need some counsel, Daniel Pryor does a lot of counseling with young people. And how do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yes, the phone number is 425-778-6169, 778-6169. And people also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. There are about 4 years of these podcasts. Mm-hmm. I think maybe even a little more than 4 years of these podcasts there. You'll find this podcast there as well. You can rehear it or send it on to other people.
Okay.
Offices, again, Kirkland and Edmonds.
Okay, always wonderful stuff with Daniel Pryor, life coach and counselor, Sound Mind on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.